Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. Welcome to the PI World Education Series on getting your children interested in investing. Edmund Shing has successfully achieved this and joins us to share his experiences. Edmund's a parent, Chief Investment Officer at BNP Paribas Wealth Management, an accomplished investor and author of The Idle Investor on how to invest 5 minutes a week and beat the professionals. So a fountain of knowledge and experience to guide us in this series for parents, their children, and probably more broadly anyone who wants to start investing. Edmund, enormous thanks for joining us.
It's a great pleasure, Tamsin.
How many children do you have and how old are they?
Well, too many is the answer. Four. Four I have all the way going from 24 down to 16, three boys, one girl. So a good range and all old enough to know better, but all old enough also to be tried and gently nudged on their path to investing.
And are they all interested?
To varying degrees. I can't say I've had absolute success with all of them yet, but there remains plenty of time. But I would say with Ben, who's 24, definitely, he's extremely engaged in investing. I think secondly, Lucy, my 22-year-old, she's getting more and more interested. And Oliver, my third one's actually, he's actually at university studying economics and finance. So in theory, he should be the most interested in them, of them all. But again, you know, because he's studying the theory, I'm sort of letting him do that as well as before pushing too much into the single stock arena.
So do you think it's an age thing? There's an age at which children can become interested, and before that age, it wouldn't be appropriate?
No, not really. I think it very much depends. Because I remember when I started investing, my parents said, my parents just don't believe in investing in anything other than bricks and mortar or putting cash in a bank, which is very traditional. But I myself started investing when I was about 14. For some reason, I just decided M&S shares, Marks & Spencer shares were a good idea, toddled off down to what was then the Midland Bank, wasn't even HSBC in those days, still the good old Midland Bank, and bought some shares over the counter. Which is, I can't really remember why I did it back in the dim mists of time, but I did. So I must have been interested even back then at 14. So I think I think you can start relatively early. And I actually started off quite early with my kids, but you know, it's not a straightforward process. It does take a bit of time and you do have to be a little bit sneaky about the whole process.
So how did you go about it?
Well, I think the first thing is to set up accounts for them. I mean, it's the practical thing, isn't it? The first thing is, even before you talk to them about it, you need to get those sort of practicalities out of the way. So in this case, a junior ISA account for each of the four was set up in turn. And then of course, you have to put some money in. So I put some money in and I actually started investing for them initially using funds just as a way of getting the money invested to get the ball rolling, as it were. And then after that, then I try to, you know, obviously engage them in the process. And you know what? It's wonderful. Tamsin, naked greed works wonders sometimes. So just showing them that, you know, how much I've been putting in and the fact it was growing was a good start. And I think that's the sort of the first point. You sort of engage their naked greed and they say, oh, I can get to a bigger amount of money. Oh, this is good. And that's really the starting point.
So how old were they when you started their junior ISAs?
Oh, gosh, they were not very old, actually. Anywhere from 6 to 10, around that sort of age. Because, you know, I didn't start them all at the same time because they were obviously given the spread in age. But all between 6 and 10. So their ISAs are actually invested in sort of solid funds for a fair few years first. And then one by one, I've been engaging them in what to invest and say, look, the money's invested now, okay, but the idea is that you direct the investment, not me, because I think it's a very, very useful life skill from my point of view, because it's something that will hopefully serve them well throughout their lives. And as you well know, the earlier you get started in investing, the better, because of course of the miracle of compounding. So in fact, that was one of the first things I tried to convey to them is exactly that, the miracle of compounding, that if you invest steadily over a long period of time, acorns can grow into oak trees. And it's really just trying to get that point across. And once they grasp that, then we can talk about, we can move on, talk about, well, what do you invest in? But I think the first point is getting the concept of compounding across first in a non-mathematical fashion, obviously, but just getting that idea across that if you do start early and you are consistent, you can really, you know, you can really turn a small amount of money into really quite a substantial amount of money, given enough time and effort.
And there must be a temptation for them to think that you could do it better. So why not just leave it to you and they don't have to put the effort in?
No, I think Tamsin, you underestimate the exuberance of youth. In fact, to be honest and to be fair to my son, my older son, Ben, in his first full year of investing, he actually beat me.
Wow.
He actually had a better performance in his fund than I did. Yeah, it's a bit gutting, really. But at the same time, you know, I was proud. I was proud because, okay, you could call it beginner's luck or otherwise. But at the end of the day, he's motivated. He's doing a good job. And by hook or by crook, yes, his performance was better than mine. Now, whether that continues, we'll see. But that certainly, it introduces a nice spirit of competition, which I also think helps.
And a nice shared experience as well.
Well, exactly. I think the beauty of this all is that, you know, you can do all sorts of fun things like set up WhatsApp groups where you start to talk about stock tips. Well, I say stock tips, but possible investments, I should say, whether they be investment themes or, in fact, single stocks. So, you know, for instance, again, I think the power of narrative is very important in all of this because we all, as human beings, respond to stories. We always have done, we always will do. And I think that was my approach with the kids, to try to approach getting them interested in investing via a series of stories. So trying to appeal to themes and narratives that they themselves are already interested in their own lives. One example would be, for instance, talking about Warhammer. Now, we all know Warhammer and Games Workshop. I'm sure many of your regular subscribers and viewers know this stock and the story extremely well. But again, you know, my children, particularly my older son, Ben, is a very keen Warhammer fan. And so for him, it was natural to start looking at a company like Games Workshop. And actually, he actually got very lucky because he actually met the CEO of Games Workshop by chance at a dinner one day. So, I mean, you know, you can't really do better than that, getting access to the CEO in a privileged setting. So, and actually what's even worse, Tamsin, is that my son Ben said to me after meeting the CEO, wow, that's a really impressive company. I love the product. The CEO is really impressive. I'm going to buy the shares. He said, why don't you buy the shares, Dad? And I said, well, unfortunately, you see, with the shares then were at £30. Okay. I remember the number and you'll see why. £30. And I said, well, I remember Games Workshop went to a tiddly little company and their share price was 250 pence. So a long, long time ago, but at a much smaller price. And, you know, this is the classic behavioral finance mistake. You get anchored. I was anchored to that price of 250 pence. So, of course, I couldn't bring myself to buy something at 3,000 pence. Ben did it. And, of course, it then went to, you know, three times more.
It's over and there I am sitting at the wayside.
You don't need to tell me. I know. And I've never invested in it. Didn't invest it at £2.50, £4. Didn't invest it at £30. And now Ben's sitting on something over £100. What can I say? but at least it shows the power of narrative. He got the narrative. It was something that he had a personal interest in already. And then, yeah, he got lucky and met the CEO as well. But that reinforced his belief in this story, and it gave him, I think, faith in the investment narrative, which is why he invested, and that's been fantastic. Now, of course, it doesn't always work out like that, as we all know. You know, with the best of intentions and with the best research, things can still go wrong, and investments can still go south. But it's great that he has had one or two investments, and luckily for him, that's turned into his biggest investment. Obviously, you know, something that triples in a very short order. So it's very nice, and that's been positive for him. But equally, for my other children, then there are other narratives that appeal. For instance, for my daughter Lucy, it was a little bit different because she's very interested in treatments for depression because she's seen a lot of her friends personally affected by that. And of course, during COVID, this has been something that's really affected students, and she's, you know, she's of that age. And so she's seen it around her. And she's seen that a lot of the treatments are really not very good. And so she's been interested in alternative treatments that are coming on stream, such as, for instance, medical use of cannabis. Now, you know, there are lots of companies and there are ETFs and funds which you can buy for that. And she got into that idea. So we've had a long discussion about the medicinal benefits of bizarrely cannabis, because, you know, there are medicinal benefits for long-term pain relief, for depression, and so on, and also for the extracts of magic mushrooms, believe it or not. But again, there are companies there, and there is an ETF that invests in companies that are researching those potential remedies also for treatment resistant depression. So this is something that's very personal to her and also to me, because I studied psychology way back when. So actually it's great, again, as you said, Tamsin, it's a shared interest which drives that narrative.
And what about clean energy stocks, because that's very much of interest to young people these days?
It is. Again, I think you've got to dig amongst that with clean energy, because it has been, firstly, it's been on a hell of a tear. So it's very difficult to find clean energy stocks that are reasonably valued. But certainly the narrative obviously resonates. Although I have to be honest, one thing that has resonated more with my children on that sort of on the ecological side of things rather than clean energy has been the future of food. For instance, vegan and vegetarian foods. And, you know, think about Oatly, which is going to come to market. Think about Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat. And also all of these new technologies talking about cell-grown meat and fish, which does not involve the killing of animals or fish at all, because they're grown from stem cells. Now, that is very early technology, but my kids are, yeah, when I told them about that, they go, oh, that sounds really good. Because, again, they have been, I mean, one of my kids is pescatarian and the others have been moving towards more vegetarian-based diets. And so it very much appeals to them. I think the ethical angle is very important there, and it does appeal to their own personal ethics.
So a lot of people, adults as well as children, glaze over if you talk about finance and investing. Why should children be interested in investing?
Well, you know, Tamsin, I just think it's one of those things that's never taught at school, first of all. Yeah, basic finance. How does a mortgage work? How do savings and investments work? What is the compound effect? Now, to me, that is what I would call useful mathematics. And it's quite basic, but it's never taught at school. Instead, they teach us things like algebra and trigonometry. And I'm sorry, I don't know about you, Tamsin, but me, I don't know the last time a cosine or a tangent was of any practical use to me. It's one of those things you learn for your exams, and once you've got the maths exams out of the way, you promptly forget about them. I can just about remember Pythagoras. That's about it. So after that, trigonometry has gone out the window. And I just wish, instead of spending so much time on these sort of arcane theoretical ideas, they actually spend a bit of time on more practical, useful everyday life mathematics, like how do you estimate, what are statistics, and how do you use them? And most importantly, yes, how does the compounding effect work, and why is it worth starting early to when you save and invest? And that's one thing I've tried to get across to my kids. And I think that's what children and what parents need to get across to their kids. The earlier you start, the better. Saving is simply what you earn, taking away what you spend. The leftover is what you save. The more you save and the better you invest it over a long period of time, the bigger amount of money you will end up with. And I think that's the key point that we need to get across to our kids.
And can you give us an example of how compounding works? Say £100 invested today or £1,000 invested today?
Yeah. Well, I think the easiest way is to think of the law of 72. And the law of 72 is very, very simple. It says you take the number 72 and you divide it by the rate at which you think you can make money. So let's say you think you can earn 10% a year. How long will it take you to double your money is going to be 72 divided by 10, so just over 7 years, right? So that's powerful. So if you say, I'm going to give you £1,000 today, let's say you earn 10% a year, you will double that. That will become £20,000 in just over 7 years. That's pretty cool. If you then say, okay, if you can really shoot the lights out and do 20%, you can double your money in less than 4 years. Now then they start to get excited. And I think that's the way to get it across to them. That really, there are very few ways, there are very few other ways to make money grow like that. Investing, well, obviously saving first to generate the capital, and then investing that capital in a relatively intelligent manner, using a bit of your own research, can generate good returns. And those returns turn into serious money.
Tremendous. So what attributes do you think an individual needs or a child needs in order to be able to successfully invest?
I would say Well, first of all, not mathematics. I think people over-egg that. What they really need are curiosity. And that's true in life. I think curiosity is so important. You need to be intellectually curious. You need to be interested, and you need to be motivated to find out more and to read up on things. I think that really helps. And I think probably most importantly, and that this is whether children or adult, discipline. To be able to apply a methodology in a disciplined fashion is so much more important than being very, very clever or very good at maths. I mean, some of the best mathematicians and academics in this world have been dreadful investors. And that's because they don't have the discipline, you know? And I think that is a psychological attribute that's so, so important. And, you know, maybe kids don't start with it. None of us start with that much discipline, really, let's be honest. But we can learn it over time. And, you know, like anything, Tamsin, as I'm sure you know yourself, as with investment, you often learn by your mistakes, and painful mistakes can be very salutary. For instance, my elder son did dabble in GameStop, and he lost money on GameStop recently. And now he knows not to do that again. Again, he departed from his own discipline, and now he's understood why the discipline was important in the first place. So, yeah, salutary lesson, and better to learn now rather than later when it could involve more money.
How much capital do you think an individual needs in order to start investing?
You know, that's a difficult question, but, you know, you can start investing in ETFs from £1,000. So I would say £1,000 is already a good starting point, because it's a meaningful amount that you can put into an ISA or a junior ISA, that you can invest in a one or several ETFs without incurring massive charges, and then you can let that grow. So I really think you can start with a relatively small amount of money, and or even better, regular investing. Just put a little bit aside every month, like a little couple of £100 every month, month in, month out. Once you set up a regular savings scheme like that, again, it will build up over time. And that's probably the best way, almost treating it a little bit like a tax. It stops you from spending that money. The money automatically disappears from your bank account before you get the chance to spend it. And then it's getting invested. That's probably one of the best ways to do it.
And what sort of a return should an early stage investor be looking to achieve from their investing?
Well, I think these days, I think we have to be a little bit more realistic. But I would not say less than 10%. I would say 10% is realistic. Now, you're not going to get 10% every year, as we know. Some years you're going to get more, some years you're going to get a lot less, or even a negative return. But over the long haul, I would say, and averaging 10%, and that's even without picking single stocks. That's even only using, let's say, investment trusts or ETFs and being, you know, again, choosing wisely amongst those. I think you can easily generate that in equities, though. I mean, obviously, if you're in bonds, then it's not really going to work out. But if we assume it's going to be a largely stock-based investment philosophy, then yeah, I would say you can definitely generate 10% odd.
And are there any other goals that an early stage investor should be setting for themselves?
Well, I think they need to understand it's a long journey. And it's a long journey, not just in terms of investment, but also in terms of learning. You know, you're not going to learn everything overnight. And I think, you know, I've been in this game a long time. I still feel inadequate, and I still learn every day. I'm finding out new stuff all the time. So that's what I think we all find fascinating about this sort of journey, and this game of investing is it is a journey, and we're always learning until we're in a wooden box under the ground. We'll hopefully continue to learn, and that's the approach I take. And so I do think that one of the goals one should have is to be learning all the time in many ways. And this is not just true about investing, this is just true in life generally. I think one of the goals one should have is strive to be a slightly better person every day than you were the day before, right? And that's it. Just make small improvements day by day. And that's also another form of compounding, by the way, but it's compounding perhaps in terms of personal development as opposed to just cash.
And what about risk? I spoke to my niece about investing, and the idea that she could lose some of her capital as well as make capital gain was just too terrifying for her. How do you deal with that question?
Yeah, so the way I deal with that is by trying to explain that there are the ups and the downs, and that the ups outweigh the downs, but you will still get downs. And the key is not to change course. And actually, the whole COVID crisis and the crash that we had in March of last year is a very good lesson in that, because yes, we had a very sharp drawdown of over 30% in the market. So a lot of people's investments suddenly looked very sick by March. from having looked fairly healthy two months before. But then what's happened since? Well, we've had a very impressive recovery. And for those people who hadn't sold out at the bottom and had stayed the course, they're probably now better off than they were at the beginning of 2020, even before the COVID crash happened. So I think you can point to that and say, look, you know, things do recover. Stock markets go to new all-time highs sooner or later. This has been true throughout history. And sometimes it's longer and sometimes it's sooner. But it does happen. And I think the key thing here is not to lose faith, not to panic and sell at the bottom, and stick with the program. But you're right, it's not easy, Tamsin. And yeah, no one likes to lose money. But they also try to make the kids understand that if you want to make, you know, good returns, that does come at a price. And the price is you will not see your investments go up in a straight line. Sometimes they'll go really, really well, and then sometimes they'll do badly. And the key here is to try to control your emotions, and particularly control your emotions when things are going not so well, and just keep plugging away.
And taking the drawdown last March to lose sort of upwards 30% and more and more and more is quite painful in such a short time period. That probably was your children's first experience of a major drawdown. How did they cope with that?
Well, the easiest way is by not looking at their accounts. I have to be honest. It's quite amazing what you can do if you don't look at the numbers. So in a sense, I think that's a problem a lot of investors make, and I certainly do, is I look far too much at the screen, far too often. And that's sometimes the best approach. When you know things are bad, don't even bother looking. Just take a few days off from looking, because you know it's not going to be happy reading. So what's the point? If you know you're not going to change your strategy, why are you even looking? So, but yeah, it wasn't easy. I think the best thing was to tell them not to look and tell them to do something else. It's probably your best bet.
Now, I know in further episodes of this series, we're going to cover going into the detail of how to invest. But here, just give us an overview of where people should start.
Well, I think Tamsin, a great place, as always, you know, because we always talk about diversification. So a great area to start with is obviously ETFs and investment trusts. Now, I didn't say open-ended funds like a unit trust, for the simple reason that a lot of platforms, if you invest with someone, you know, some of these platform providers like a AJ Bell or a Hargreaves Lansdown, they actually charge you a fortune for you to hold funds, which I always find really strange, because I really don't understand why they would charge me to hold a fund. I mean, the fund manager's doing the work, not Hargreaves Lansdown, but they do. So for that reason, I'm very keen on ETFs and investment trusts, where you don't incur this extra charge with these platform providers. Investment trusts are very useful because you still get the benefit of an active fund manager. And for certain segments of the market, that can be very important, because active fund managers have been shown in certain areas to outperform the broad indices by quite a margin over a number of years. And areas I'm thinking about include emerging markets, Japan, small caps, and a lot of specialist areas as well. These are areas where active fund managers often outperform the benchmarks over a period of time. Now, however, there are lots of places where they don't, like US large caps. There's really not a lot of point picking a US large cap fund manager, because ETFs do the job much more cheaply and probably better over the long term. So in those areas, ETFs are an excellent way to go. And the beauty of using ETFs is the range has expanded enormously in the UK and Europe over the last few years. So you have an enormous choice today. In fact, probably too much of a choice, but you have plenty of choice for whatever type of and spread of investment you would like to make generally.
Edmund, thank you so much for your wisdom and guidance, which has been invaluable. To find out more on this series and other educational videos, please go to piworld.co.uk. See you soon.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.